The first five games of the 1975 World Series did not lack intrigue, but this was just a precursor to what would unfold in Game 6 at Fenway Park. Cincinnati was a win away from its first title in 35 years. The Red Sox needed to win both on their home field to break a drought that had lasted nearly six decades. The hype surrounding a contest of this magnitude is always large, but this time, the buildup gained strength, thanks to 3 days of rain delaying the regularly scheduled proceedings.
I think it's harder as the home team when you're getting rained out because you're not together. I mean, you go to the ballpark, and we didn't work out because it was raining so hard. We didn't even get on the field. We might have played catch a little bit, but that's about it. No hitting, no nothing. At least the Reds, you know, they're in a hotel. They can, you know, go out, have dinner, be together. When you're at home, you're with your families, or there's lots of people coming in for the series. And I remember it was like, oh, God, are we ever going to play this game? It had been a long season for me anyway. You know, I was just a rookie, and I'd never played that many games. And I was just saying, God, let's get on with this thing. You almost forget why you're there, because you're out of your rhythm. I don't know who had an advantage. I don't think any team really had one, to be honest with you. It didn't make us pull together or anything like that, because we weren't there.
Well, we know we have to win one game, you know, going over there. And we try, and we will win it. We know that. But with those 3 days rain, we was a little worried about because we don't got a chance to work out outside. We didn't work out in one of the facilities with the group and one of the universities. But, you know, we don't know if they're going to affect us or going to affect our timing or whatever. And then we were going good, you know, winning the series 3-2.
When the weather subsided, the series resumed, with Louis Tiant taking the mound for the third time. His opponent, Gary Nolan, ran into trouble right away, as Fred Lynn came to the plate with two on and two out in the first.
And there's a high fly ball deep to right field. Going back, Griffey, forget it. It's gone. And this place is rocking. And Tony, the words just out of your mouth, Fred Lynn got the rest, and he hits a deep home run in the bleachers.
In the second half of the season, my power stats went way down. I still hit for average, and I was hitting a lot of balls from left field, but wasn't driving the ball like I did early in the season. I was down to about 175 pounds maybe, or even less than that. No, and we didn't lift weights in those days, so, you know, I was running on fumes, to be honest. And when I hit that ball out in the first, I mean, it was 20 rows over the bullpen. I mean, that's a bomb, especially when it's cold and damp. And I hit a ball that far, I don't think, since like April. So I probably was the most surprised guy in the place. And, you got the crowd into the game. It was really a big boost for us because you get 35,000 people going, oh, God, you know, and they need to win this game. And then got the fans into it. Our club was into it. So it was a big boost to us emotionally.
The 3-0 lead held through four innings as Tiant continued to baffle Cincinnati bats. But in the fifth, the Reds came alive. A triple by Ken Griffey scored Ed Armbrister and Pete Rose. Two batters later, Johnny Bench's single off the Green Monster drove in another. George Foster broke the tie in the top of the seventh with a two-run double beyond the reach of Lynn in center field. Then, Cesar Geronimo led off the eighth with a long home run to left, driving Tiant out of the game.
Well hit right field, that ball. If it's fair, she's gone. It is a fair ball, home run for Geronimo. And it's a 6-3 ball game. That's his second home run of this series. Cincinnati getting a little bit closer. The last world championship was in 1940.
Now up 6-3, Cincinnati appeared in control, and Boston appeared a beaten team as they came to bat in the last of the eighth.
Yeah, well, we were winning, and yeah, we think that we're going to win right there. And we went ahead, and I think that we got it.
just because we were down, that didn't mean we were out. And when you're down like that, the attitude of the club is, all right, first guy gets on base.
Lynn, off his leg, Barbon challenging it, but he can't make a play. Lynn, a single. Tremendous effort by Barbon.
First guy gets on base, okay, got something going. Next guy gets on base, okay, now we got something going.
Hi, Barbon walks him.
Plate right now. Here comes Sparky.
Crowd gets in it, and that's how rallies start.
Bernie Carbo, a pinch hitter.
Carbo came to the plate as the potential tying run, but gave no indication of being a threat to drive one out of the park.
Carbo a little bit late on the swing.
2-2 pitch. Just did get a piece of it to stay alive. You talk about fighting off a good pitch.
Looked like he hit that out of the catcher's glove.
He did.
I think one of the things that Johnny Bench said after the game, he said one thing about Bernie Carbo, he doesn't remember his last swing. You really have to be in the moment. And being, the worst swing in the history of the game, Pete Rose said it looked like a little leaguer trying to learn how to hit. Bench said it was the worst little league swing ever saw. It was a cut fastball. He ran it inside of me, and it was in the catcher's glove, and the umpire called it a ball. I just tickled it right out of his glove, and John was arguing with the umpire that it was a strike. I'm thinking, man, I'm almost struck out on that pitch. I felt that John, like we said in the meetings, that he'd come back with a fastball. He threw it out over the plate, and when I hit it, I saw Geronimo turn his back. I knew the ball was gone.
Deep center field, way back, way back. We're tied up.
Second base, I was yelling at Pete Rose, don't you wish you were this strong, don't you wish you were this strong, and Pete's yelling back, isn't this the greatest game, this is the World Series, isn't this fun?
Well, the fans have come alive again, Tony, Joe, they are alive.
Into the ninth it went, tied at six. The Reds were sent down in order. Boston, however, started their half of the frame with a walk to Denny Doyle and a single by Carl Yastrzemski. Doyle reached third base with no outs. Carlton Fisk was intentionally walked, bringing Lynn to the plate with a chance to win it. Lynn's fly ball was caught by George Foster near the left field line, who then threw home to get Doyle trying to score. Rico Petrocelli grounded out, and a golden opportunity went by the wayside. Cincinnati had its chance in the 11th with Ken Griffey on first, one out, and Joe Morgan up.
Well hit, right field, deep. Evans is going back near the wall, and oh, what a catch he made! What a catch by Dwight Evans, and it's a double play. Griffey didn't know what happened as Evans made a spectacular catch, and take a look at this. Dwight Evans went way back. He had no room to go anymore. Watch it. He knew where he was. One-handed catch. Crashes against the wall. Now his throw is off the mark by about 20 feet to the right of first base. Burleson covered the bag. The double play.
The catch by Evans near the short right field wall at Fenway kept it tied through 10.5. It would remain deadlocked into the bottom of the 12th, with Carlton Fisk leading off.
Well, we were watching the pitcher warm up, and I think he'd thrown two shutout innings prior to that. And he's a sinker baller. Putz is a low ball hitter, and Putz says, I'm going to hit one off the wall, and you drive me in. Well, he forgot about the part where I'm supposed to drive him in.
There it goes, a long drive. If it stays fair, home run.
When he hit it, I knew immediately it had distance, but I didn't know if it was going to hook. And it just got inside the pole. And, I was elated, not only because we won, but I didn't have to hit again. I forget how late it was, and it was after midnight for sure. So it was pretty doggone exciting, I'll tell you that.
We will have a seventh game in this 1975 World Series. Carlton Fisk becomes the first player in the series to hit one over the wall into the net. Red Sox win it 7-6 in 12 innings. And Carlton Fisk had a lot of little boy in him right there, Joe.
He took one step, knew it was going to be close. He knew it was gone, and it was dancing in the streets all the way around.
A lot of body English for Carlton Fisk.
How many steps does he take? One. He waits to see it. Get over. Get over.
He knew it. There it is.
The magnitude of the moment and what had preceded it was very much apparent to Fisk as he spoke about it the next night.
Probably one of the most exciting ball games that I've ever played in, regardless of whether it's been a World Series or whether it's been a regular ball game, but even more so since it was a World Series. It was a crucial game for us and maybe a crucial game for baseball itself. I think we showed a lot of people how the game's supposed to be played.
After 4 hours, 12 innings, and many heart-stopping moments, Boston was still alive. The confidence of the disappointed Reds, though, never wavered.
You know, we got ahead. We got ahead on 6-3 into the ninth inning when they tied it up. That happened. But we never lost confidence on us. We told Sparky we're going to go out there and to win this game. And that was it. So, you know, the day, after the game six, we were at the clubhouse talking. The general bench, myself, Pete, Morgan, and some other guys, and we were talking about a great game we played. And that was a great game. And I expected for months to say, how are you guys talking about that? I tell you, Spike, the season, we can be a world champion right now, but they didn't try to see that. It was Spike, we got another game, don't worry about it, we come back to more than them. And that's the way we feel and the way we play, even when we lost, but it was fun to play.
On to game seven. It would turn out to be, at the time, the most-watched sporting event in U.S. history, and the large audience of some 75 million got to see another thriller. Similar to the night before, the Red Sox were first to score, and took a 3-0 lead against Cincinnati starter Don Gullett after three innings.
And there is Bill Lee, ready to start his warm-up pitches from Southern California. His father's here tonight. His father says, Bill Lee is not as far out of his face as everybody says he is. He says, sometimes I don't understand him, but he's a very sensitive, intelligent young man who's a lot of fun to be around.
In the most important outing of his career, Lee was up to the task, shutting down the Big Red Machine over the first five frames. But the failure to turn two in the sixth, followed by a towering home run off the bat of Tony Perez, and an ill-timed injury, prevented Lee from going further and maintaining the shutout.
No, I was ready to go. I threw great up until we didn't turn the double play. Then I hung the curveball to Perez, which was a mistake, and I still had enough in the tank. It's just I developed a blister on my thumb, and I couldn't. We couldn't stop the bleeding, and I had to come out of the game.
There's his blooper pitch. There it is. A high drive. He's waiting for that one. That one is gone over everything. Perez timed that blooper pitch and slammed it over the screen out on the Lansdowne Street, and now we have another one-run ball game in this World Series.
Well, if we don't hit the home run, we might lose the series again. And that was all in three in World Series. And I was sure I was looking for a pitcher to hit it out because we need a home run on that time, at that moment. And he did come out with a blooper pitch, and he threw it before. And I was ready to walk, but, you know, I know he got it. In the back of my mind, I know he got it, and he might throw it again. And he did, and I hit it good. I hit it over the gym most of it, and we got back, and then I just see the guys on the dugout, and I hit that home run, and coming in, and they say, hey, now we got it, now we're going to beat him. And then the Messing Hill song, we fight the game, and Joe Moyer winning on the night. I mean, that was the way happened. That's why that home run is one of the most important. I know I hit a home run in 67 World Series. I mean, All-Star game, 67 All-Star game, my first home run All-Star game. But that was Tony Perez home run. and that no make and game number 77 and 30, and that game 7 in 1975, that was a big home run to come back and win the series. That's what I feel. That's what I think. It was more important for me than home.
If we had had the trainer in Montreal, Yves Lambert, he came out with a cauterized silver nitrate stick, tipped it in water, cauterized my thumb, stopped the bleeding. I had a tremendous breaking ball after that when I was in Montreal. If I had him instead of Buddy LaRue, I would have won that World Series game.
Roger Maret replaced Lee with one out and one on in the seventh. After a pop fly, a stolen base, and a walk, up came Pete Rose.
Now the Boston fans are becoming uneasy. I can't imagine Rose sitting out 3 days with the rain. There's a line shot to center. Here's a man rounding third. Here comes the throw. It is not in time. The other runners advance, and the Reds have tied it and have runners on second and third. Griffey scored easily. Lynn's throw was wide of the plate. Armbruster raced to third, and Rose went down to second on the throw to the plate.
Here's the ball hit out to Freddie Lynn, center field. Griffey with a good speed off second. Nobody in cutoff position for the Red Sox. A fundamental mistake allowing a runner, Pete Rose, to go into second.
Momentum had swung the way of the Reds. The Red Sox went down quietly in their next two turns at bat. Now in the top half of the ninth, score still tied at three. Ken Griffey leads off with a walk. He advances to second on a sacrifice bunt by Cesar Geronimo, then to third on a ground out to the right side of the infield by Dan Dreesen. Pete Rose walks. It's up to Joe Morgan.
There's a looper. May drop. It's in for a hit. Here comes a throw to third. Rose hits a dirty safe. And there goes Morgan down to second. And the Reds have the lead 4-3. As Joe Morgan looped a base hit into center field. Scoring Griffey from third. The throw from Lynn to third was too late. Rose hitting the dirt there. And on the throw to third, going down to second, is Joe Morgan.
You know, with the rain, all the rain that we had, it was a really, really slow outfield. And back in those days, you know, especially being a rookie, I only had two or three pairs of shoes. And they were all soaked, waterlogged. And they had leather bottoms. So they got heavy. And it's not like today's shoes were, they were light and well-built. These weren't. They were cloggers. So if he hits that ball at their place on turf, I catch it. There's no question in my mind that I can get to it. But, you know, I had to respect his little bit of power, so I'm deeper than I really want to be in right center. But you have no chance to throw anybody out on a base hit because the ball hardly even gets to you. That's, yeah, so, you know, you're kind of in between there. Normally, if a guy's on second, I peed in because I want to throw the guy out. But the field was so wet and so slow that it was difficult to do that. And I got the ball on one hop, but I was probably two steps slower on that field under those conditions.
Boston was unable to muster a rally in the bottom of the ninth. Reds relief pitcher Will McEnany got the first two men he faced. All that stood between Cincinnati and the World Series crown was Yastrzemski.
With a high fly ball. It should be all over. Geronimo's under. And Cincinnati has won the World Championship, beating the Boston Red Sox 4-3. The Reds win it in Fenway Park. Some of the veterans on this team have been very frustrated. They wanted this one badly. After winning 108 times this year, setting all kinds of records, it would have been a deep disappointment for them not to win. But they ran up against a ball club that extended them right down to the final inning of Game 7.
There were many outstanding individual performances, but it was Rose who earned MVP honors thanks to a .370 average and a series-best 10 hits. It was one of many great accomplishments achieved during his playing career, now overshadowed by his banishment over gambling. But he still hasn't lost respect among opponents and teammates.
Pete Rose, tremendous ball player with lack of ability, didn't run fast, didn't have a good arm, didn't have a position to play. but just hit line drive after line drive after line drive and set goals for himself every year to get 200 hits. Over 4,000 hits, beat Ty Cobb's record. You know, a guy that didn't have a lot of ability but believed and worked hard and played the game hard, played it, you know, ran the first base, ran it, slid ahead first in all bases, played the game the way it should be played.
One of the greatest players I played with. You know, I would play in 1960 and in Geneva, New York, and the Saint Lee, and we was on the same organization as Red until we got to the big leagues, you know, and he got there first in 63, I got there in 65, and then we played together for 6-7 years, and that was the way he plays the game, the way he do for the team, the way he wants to win. He was one of the best players I played for. I mean, he's champion. I mean, Pete Rose, to me, he was one of the greatest.
Thus ended a World Series for the history books and the memory bank, a World Series that truly fit the definition of a fall classic. The Reds would go on to win a second straight championship in 1976, beating the New York Yankees in a 4-game sweep. As for the Red Sox, their run in 1975 was a tremendous team effort, but would mark yet another near miss for the cursed franchise.
Yeah, you know what? A lot of people think we won that thing, but there's nothing like winning, and nothing can replace that for me. I came close a number of times and was always on the short end. But that's the closest I've come. You know, game 7, ninth inning, losing by 1. You know, that's hard to take, and I still think about it. There's still a hole in my career because for me, my team didn't win. All the other stuff that I did individually, I'd sacrifice all that here, take it here. I'd rather have a ring than all those other things. But having said that, it's gratifying to know that we were a part of something that was bigger than the individuals that were in there. I mean, that series put baseball back on the map. It really did. People were getting bored with baseball. The football was kind of overtaking us in popularity. But after that series, baseball just shot up in popularity. And it was because of that series and the way it was played and the guys that played in it. Game 6, like you said, and it was voted on by MLB as the greatest game ever. And to be able to say that I was a part of it, and that's pretty cool. That's gratifying, but I'd still rather have to win.
Thanks so much for tuning in to this special edition of Baseball As It Was, recalling an unforgettable October battle 40 years later. For all those who helped contribute to the program, Fred Lynn, Tony Perez, Bernie Carbo, and Bill Lee, I'm Brian Wright.